Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two. We're back. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's James Hamm. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor. We're taking you up till noon. Then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and Casey, and they'll take you to 4 o'clock. They'll take you right up to Mets at Braves. It's a wild card. Basically a playoff series.
Yeah.
Happening in Atlanta. Going to be super fun. I believe it's Luis Severino against Spencer Schwellenbach.
That's a name.
For the Braves, yeah. So it should be a fun one right here on ESPN 1320. But we got a second hour to get to. We'll get to D'Lo and KC, of course, as well. sorry, I'm flustered. Leezy's back on the prize picks.
That's not good. Hey, I did look up. So the Mets still have, they have Jake Diekman.
A's legend, yep.
They have Sean Manaea.
A's legend, yep. A's and Giants legend.
They did trade for Paul Blackburn during the season.
Oh, that's right.
He's on the 15-day.
925 legend.
Yeah, so they have plenty of former A's on this roster. And of course, Starling Marte. I did not look at the Braves to see who exactly is a former A there, but of course Matt Olson and Sean Murphy's had a bad season, really bad season for them. But they also have Ramon Laureano.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Grant Holmes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. It's kind of like a toss up, right? Who's got the most? Former A's.
Oh my, Chadwick Trump, Giants legend.
Oh,
is with the Braves. Although he's in the minors right now, per their 40-man roster.
Wait a sec. Do the Braves? Is this for real? Is Jesse Chavez still playing?
Yes. Yes.
What?
That's absolutely real. Shout out to Jesse Chavez.
41 years old, still slinging it.
Yeah, dog.
A's legend Jesse Chavez.
Hell yeah. Love
my
it for him.
Goodness, he's pitched forever.
Yeah. 41.
Wow.
Turned 41 this year. Had a decent year, too.
Yeah, I wonder how many teams he played for in his career. That's a lot.
Pittsburgh, got Atlanta, Kansas City, Oakland, Toronto, Dodgers, Angels, Rangers, Cubs, back to the Rangers, back to the Braves, back to the Cubs, back to the Angels, back to the Braves.
I think he's played for 10 different teams, but he's played for the Cubs multiple times, Braves multiple times, the Angels multiple times. Wow.
What a career. Shout out to Jesse Chavez, and shout out to Mets Braves, 4 p.m. today on ESPN 1320.
Yep.
Sacramento's sports leader. All right, so we talked about Ronnie Bell quite a bit yesterday, of course, after he had a massive drop in the 49ers' loss to the Rams on Sunday. I went back and watched, and, you know, I didn't think that he did anything on that play that felt like, I don't think he did anything like super wrong. I think he just dropped it. Cause I was with you yesterday when it felt like, man, he did way too much on that. Like he tried to jump and twist and catch and oh my God. But just, I think it's just what he had to do on that throw.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Defender's on his back. He turns inside. The ball is there. He had to jump forward a little bit, but like his leg kicks up and it looked weird. It hit him in the chest though.
Yeah.
It was imminently catchable. When I went back and watched it, I went, okay, I wonder if this is going to look like, because in the moment it's like, dude, you got to grab that.
Yep.
And then I'm writing and we're talking in the studio and stuff. And so it didn't really get a good grasp. So I wanted to go back and look at it again. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to walk away from this thinking that it wasn't as bad of a drop as I remember. No, it was bad.
It was bad.
Hit him right in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is a good throw. He was in front of the corner. He was in front of the safety. Easy completion.
He wasn't getting hit?
It wasn't like defender had an arm draped on him. Like, nope. Defender was there. Defender was near him, for sure. But if you need a defender to be 8 yards away to make a catch in the NFL, you don't belong in the NFL. Goodbye. It was a catchable. So that was my big takeaway is good throw. He did everything right except like secure the football.
Watch the ball into his hands.
Which is his problem earlier on his first drop where he's on a slant and you see his head pop up because the linebacker's coming across and he short arms it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was not great. A tough look for Ronnie Bell. I was really trying to see something that was going to get me on air today to go, hey, you know what? Not as bad as we thought. No, it was.
No, it was.
it was dreadful.
Yeah. I watched it quite a few times early on.
It was not great for our guy. All right. So we talked about Jacob Cowing yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't Jacob Cowing playing? Kyle Shanahan got asked this in his presser, or not his presser, but his conference call yesterday. And shout out to Jennifer Lee Chan from NBC Sports Bay Area, who really tried to get like an exact answer here.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the first question. Where's Jacob Cowing on his, I guess, progression in getting involved in the offense, and were there thoughts about getting him any more snaps on offense? Kyle Shanahan said he's still working to get out there.
Mm.
He is trying to get more comfortable with the offense and just earn a role with it. Gets closer and closer each week. Still got a bit to go, though. How do you hear that?
I don't like this because I feel like Shanahan is always very harsh on young receivers, and it does not work out most of the time. Like, Ayuk is the one that survived like a big downswing with him and came back. But just think of all the other guys that just haven't made it. So I don't know what they're doing there where they're not being able to get a wide receiver to progress to the point where he can actually walk on the field and actually play. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the problem is. Is it the zone blocking? Is there something else that they have to do that makes it complicated? Because, you know, 10 years ago, rookie wide receivers came into the league and they all caught for like 550 to 600 yards and three touchdowns.
You know exactly what you were getting.
And every once in a while, there's a guy who popped off for like 850 yards and everyone was like, oh my gosh, he's going to be so good.
Yep.
And then by year three, they're really good. I feel like the Niners still live in that world where the modern, like, first-year wide receiver walks into the league and, like, Puka Nacua was unbelievable last year. Justin Jefferson, unbelievable as a rookie. We're watching Marvin Harrison Jr., like, he's spectacular. And you can say, well, those are top-tier guys, whatever.
Sure.
It's like, no. There's been, for years, there have been top-tier guys that bust, that completely bust as wide receivers. Mm-hmm. I mean, even, what is it, Jameson Williams, he's trying to shake the bust right now, like that whole, you know, whether he is a bust or he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's doing a good job of like showing, hey, look, whatever happened. And what's the kid for the Chargers? Johnson.
Quentin Johnston?
Yeah, where rookie season he was atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he's got, what, three touchdowns or something in the first two,
starting to figure
first
it out.
3 weeks. Mm-hmm. He is starting to figure out. And that used to be the natural progression of receivers. Mm-hmm. It feels like with the 49ers, they get so many, they go out and they get these speed guys, and then they cannot figure out how to either have them progress or they just never have any faith and want to put them on the field. Sometimes you just got to put a dude out there.
That, I could not agree more. What is so, I would love to know, and Deebo Samuels talked about this. Kyle Shanahan's really hard on young receivers.
Yep.
And part of it is because of how precise you need to be. But at the same time, is that half yard that Jacob Cowing is lining up off, is that half yard going to make that much of a difference? Like, in all seriousness, is that half yard going to be the difference between the 49ers winning a game and the 49ers losing a game based on where Jacob Cowing lines up?
Mm.
Because you've got in the Super Bowl, you've got Kadarius Toney for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl against the Eagles 2 years ago. You've got him lining up in the wrong spot and still catching a touchdown on a play because the Patrick Mahomes and the offense just figured it out.
Yeah.
Why can the 49ers not do that? Why does their offense have to be such that if Jacob Cowing is lined up at the 40 and a half yard line instead of the 40 yard line, why is that a problem? And I guess that doesn't work because we're talking horizontally, not vertically. But you get what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's that he can't get on the field for 10 plays?
Well, see, Kyle,
I don't get it. I don't.
This is where I have a problem. It's that a guy like Xavier Worthy, right, for the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he's raw. Like, there are all kinds of things he's doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell. But week yep. one, he blows up. He has, you know,
two touchdowns.
He has a rushing touchdown. He has a receiving touchdown. Mm-hmm. That's the electricity that a player like that brings.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you got to deal with the like, things that they can't do.
Yeah.
In order to maximize the things they can do.
Yes.
And just if he runs, and Brock Purdy never throws it to him, but if he runs past everybody
mm-hmm.
three plays in a row, the defense changes.
Yes.
Because everyone in the entire building is like, oh man, if he actually throws it to him in that play, it's going to be crazy, right? So I think there's a big difference between a guy who runs a 4.6, 4.7, 40 as a wide receiver and mm-hmm. just what it takes, how much he has to be perfect on every single thing he does. Mm-hmm. Juwan Jennings, everything he does in order to create separation has to be perfect.
Exactly.
He's got to use his body to block somebody out. He's got to be able to go up and over the top of players.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not who Cowings is. He's a dude, just put him out there, do the end around,
mm-hmm.
put him out there, do a wide receiver screen once or twice, put him out there and have him just run as fast as he can.
Yeah.
Don't do anything else. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, hey, like get him in there doing some zone blocking and see what happens. I'm not
sure.
I don't want him doing a quick slant.
Mm-hmm.
But you put that guy out there and you at least try to break things up a little bit, because look, we've already seen what Ronnie Bell does. Like there's no way that Cowings is any worse. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest.
That's kind of where I get with this. If Ronnie Bell was just a little bit slow, but man, you know what? In this case, I guess it would be Juwan Jennings. It's like, man, he does everything right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's just not going to take the top off of defense, but that's fine. Then I totally get it. But if he has problems holding on to the football, which he did last year, he had those problems in the preseason this year, he had a drop earlier in the game on Sunday. I don't understand how the benefit of, hey, he knows where to line up, and he can block, so we might be able to run it when he's on the field and the defense has to account for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is more important than catching the damn ball.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. So it didn't make any sense to Jennifer Lee Chan either, and she pressed Kyle Shanahan on this. She said, how has he been looking? He's obviously back, not off the injury list, but does he look, I should say not on the injury list, but does he look like he is normal health-wise other than that? Kyle Shanahan said, oh yeah, he's totally healthy. Okay. So she said, is it more mental understanding of the offense and where he needs to be? And Kyle Shanahan reiterates, there's a lot of reasons that go into it, but he hasn't been able to make his way into that group yet. And the more he gets comfortable with the offense and the more consistent he gets, then he'll earn those opportunities. I'm over this.
Mm.
I'm so over this. I have an immense respect for Kyle Shanahan and his knowledge of football and the fact that the reason his offenses are so good is because he has such an in-depth understanding of defenses and this and that. 1,000%. But every other good coach that we talk about finds out ways to get their rookie wide receivers on the field. I'm not asking Jacob Cowing, and this is what you were getting at. I'm not asking Jacob Cowing to be Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm not asking him to be Malik Nabers.
No.
But can he get on the field a little? Can I get 10 snaps from Jacob Cowing where it's 2nd and 3 and, hey, the whole playbook's open, so we're going to put this guy out there, and hey, if it doesn't work, then we have a 3rd and short.
Yeah.
Like, do...
Can he be Rashid Shaheed? That's what... Like,
sure.
Can he be Worthy?
Mm-hmm.
Can he be just a guy who's out there for a couple plays? Teddy Ginn. Can he be someone who's just out there to run fast and stretch the defense? Every once in a while, he's going to catch a crazy bomb and everyone's going to be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But the other times, just the fear of him has value. Mm-hmm. It does. And so, I don't know.
Maybe Kyle Shanahan didn't want to throw him under the bus. Maybe drops have been a problem for him in practice too.
Yeah.
But it feels like that's just something you would just say. Like, yeah, he's struggling to hang on to the football.
Yeah, and maybe he's just, like, you get him in your building and you realize that he doesn't have the football IQ to be a player. Like, he doesn't understand when to cut, when to not, when to put on the jets and when not. But it sort of seemed like he was okay coming into the league, and I don't know.
Then why is he on the team?
Yeah.
That and so Tyler Jennings said, why not be a coach and coach him to play? That's kind of it.
Yeah.
Is if how are you not adapting your scheme if it's so impossible for rookie wide receivers? How are you not adapting your scheme a little bit just to get those players on the field? If it matters so much to get playmakers, guys with the ball in the hands, we prioritize the guys who score touchdowns. All right, that's fine. But then make it so your offense isn't apparently freaking impossible. I understand Jacob Cowing had a truncated preseason and a truncated training camp. I'm fully on board. I totally got it. But it is baffling to me that we're here in week three. And it's, well, until he gets comfortable in the offense, he's not going to get opportunities. All right, keep throwing it to Ronnie Bell then.
Yeah,
keep running him out there.
It's crazy because we're looking at a kid who, you know, as a junior caught 69 passes for 1,354 yards and 7 touchdowns at UTEP. The next year he had for Arizona, and he had 85 catches for 1,034 yards and 7 touchdowns. Finishes his college career with a COVID season, 848 yards, 90 catches, and 13 touchdowns. Like, this isn't just a run as fast as you can guy.
Mm-mm.
This is a guy who's, like, literally put together a career.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not, you know, 1 year he averaged 19.6 yards per catch. But the next year was 12.2 and 9.4. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a guy who can get out into a pass, like, into a pattern and actually make a play.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't figure out how to dumb it down a little bit for him.
Baffling.
And that's where, like to relate this to, like, the Sacramento Kings.
Sure.
It's okay to have a bunch of system players and then one or two system busters. That's okay. Because, like, it's the Bobby Jackson theory, right? You have everybody doing this incredible Princeton offense. The cuts, the passing of the big men is something no one had seen.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything is beautiful. The high level, the basketball IQ of every single one of those players was so high.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had a guy like Bobby Jackson who just came out in street ball, just played his game. He played within the system sometimes, other times he didn't. And it's kind of like what Malik Monk does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's okay to have those guys and because they cause chaos and they break up the monotony of what you're doing. And so to not be able to find a way to get one of those guys onto the football field at all, like, if you're not comfortable with a lot of what he's doing, then put him in the backfield. You know, like, hand the ball off to him just to get just get the ball in his hands. If you can't teach him how to take a handoff, I guarantee you he's taken a bajillion handoffs, whether it was in high school or as a college player, just like sitting there taking handoffs. Like, figure out a way, if you have a weapon and your team is lacking weapons at the time, to go get that explosive play. Yeah. And maybe it doesn't work out, but there's also a possibility that kid standing in the end zone on 80-yard touchdown and everyone in the building's like, oh my gosh, did you see how fast he is?
Yeah.
I'd at least like to try it here and there.
With you, man.
Especially while you're down, you know, three gigantic playmakers and your star tight end, your jack of all trades wide receiver, and your superstar running back. Mm-hmm. Okay. You gotta figure out ways to use what you got, man.
Gotta do something.
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm glad you brought up the Sacramento Kings because I want to shift gears to the NBA real briefly here. This just caught my eye this morning, and it shouldn't have blown my mind, but it did.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi Leonard had his intro presser with the Toronto Raptors 6 years ago today.
It's wild.
That was so long ago. So many things have happened in the NBA since Kawhi Leonard went to the Raptors. It's crazy how quickly that went from Kawhi goes to Toronto, they win the finals, they beat the Warriors in the finals in 2019, and it was like, wow, Kawhi wins a finals MVP with the Spurs and wins a ring, goes to a different team and wins a ring as a finals MVP. Now he's going to go to the Clippers. And oh my God, is he going to win a ring and a finals MVP with a third team and bring another championship to a team that doesn't have one? And the way the wheels have fallen off since then, I'm so interested in how we're going to assess Kawhi Leonard over the next decade.
Yeah, he's probably going to be one of the most difficult players to assess as far as like the grand scheme of their career, because the numbers, yeah, like points per game, his averages and stuff will be fine, mm-hmm. but the overall numbers won't be. The overall like volume of scoring for his career, his overall rebounds or steals or anything else, they're not going to be off the charts because of his inability to stay on the court like the last, realistically, it's 7 years of his career,
mm-hmm.
right?
He played 68 games this year. That was the most games he'd played in a season since 2016-17.
That's wild. 16-17.
So long ago.
To put that in perspective, De'Aaron Fox came in the league the next year.
He hasn't played 70 games since De'Aaron Fox got into the league.
That's wild.
It's ridiculous.
And like, look, as someone who covered that series, the mm-hmm. you know, the finals, yeah. I was in Toronto. They sent me there twice
mm-hmm.
To cover the finals, and it was spectacular, right?
Oh God, I bet.
Yeah, Toronto's an amazing city. Shout out to Toronto. The people mm-hmm. the people were cool. Actually, the fans were really rude to media inside the building, which was really awkward and weird. Plus, we also had the situation where Kevin Durant popped his Achilles on the court, and Kyle Lowry had to like take the mic and yell at the fans.
Yeah.
But overall, like the experience was amazing. Like there was a father and son that lined up 3 days early and just sat out front of the line waiting to get in, not to the building, into Jurassic Park, which was outside. Lord. They were there for 3 days and mm-hmm. super cool experience, father and son.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. At the last second, the Raptors came out and gave the father and son tickets to inside the game.
Incredible.
Wild, right? So watching all of it play out, though, it just feels like another lifetime ago. And I was in the locker room twice at a game 7 in Oakland. Once when the Cavs won, once when the Warriors won.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have been back in Toronto. Like the way that works is we all had our plane tickets lined mm-hmm. up for them to go back. And then what, Clay got hurt in the game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they sure did.
We had to cancel our flights. We're waiting for the game to end. And then you have to get on and cancel your flight super quick in order to make sure it's 24 hours in advance, because we would have had to fly out the next morning because Toronto is such a brutal flight to get to. So I didn't go to game, it was game 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Oakland.
In Oakland, yeah.
Because I had been traveling nonstop that whole time, and they're like, hey, you just get ready and get ready to be on a plane the next morning because mm-hmm. we're going to have you back up in Toronto. It was wild to be part of all that.
Yeah.
And that was, it feels like it was so long ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's crazy.
That's wild.
Crazy. Yeah, shout out to Kawhi Leonard. Just nuts that feels like it was, it feels like yesterday, but also, like I said, so much time has passed since then, and I'm interested to see how Kawhi's legacy kind of shakes out. Obvious Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Gonna kind of go down as an all-timer, but it's gonna feel like wherever he lands in the all-time pantheon, it's going to feel short of what we thought after that 2019 season.
Yeah, I would have a tough time putting him in the top 100. Like if the NBA does their you know, another version of the top 75 or top 100, I don't think.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. I mean, like,
come on.
Realistically, look at the games played. Like of all time? No. Like,
I'm going to hard disagree there.
It's tough.
He's been so freaking good. He's played 696 games and he's been unbelievable.
But 696 games in, what, 13 years?
Yeah. Yeah, missed the whole season with an ACL.
Yeah.
In 21-22, yeah.
That's tough, man.
All-NBA last year still? I
don't
know. Kawhi,
I don't know where I put him.
Hell of a player. All right, we got to hit a break. Oh, geez, we're going to be late. We got a huge break coming up. All right, so we got to hit a break. I'm going to the Coliseum for the last time today. Let's talk about it next on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
You're Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hey, welcome back in. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you till noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and Casey. The handoff actually coming up in about 15 minutes. I think it's a KC day today. You here? I saw KC. He's back today.
I think. I don't know.
I hope so. Either way, one of D'Lo or KC will be in about 15 minutes right here on the Insiders. All right. I don't really have a plan for this, to be totally honest. I'm going to my last A's game at the Coliseum today.
Okay.
And I tried to like write something down and I couldn't. So I'm just going to talk about it on the radio because that's kind of what I do. And I'm going to hope to get to some kind of conclusion.
Okay.
It's weird, man. It's a really weird thing. And I think it's made especially so by the fact that they're going to be in Sacramento next year and we're going to cover the heck out of them and we'll do a great job doing so. But at the same time, I was kind of thinking about it last night. And it's just like it's obviously different because of how things kind of wound up with the team's locations, but I think it's in the realm of what people felt like when they tore Arco down. Like, again, it's different because the Kings are still here and they're at Golden One and they have this beautiful new arena and stuff. But there's that factor of like, this is a place where so many people grew up, or this is a place where so many people, like the first thing I think about, dead air, can't have it. The first thing I think about is just like, I tried practicing this, so I wouldn't do this. It's just like the people that you get to spend time with there.
Mm-hmm.
Sucks.
Yeah. I'll say this, Kyle. Take over for a sec while you.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, while you
thank
think.
You.
My first baseball game I ever went to, my uncle picked up me and all my cousins, and we all went down to an A's game. I leaned over the dugout, and Mark McGuire signed an 87 Tops, which is still in my possession.
That's so sick.
I walked up to the field and pregame, and I had a little pamphlet of papers, and Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell, one of the greatest double play combos in the history of the game, handed me, signed autographs for me as like a young
That's
kid.
That's dope.
In high school, me and my friends would skip out and drive the 2.5 hours and go sit at A's games and yell at Ricky Henderson and almost get kicked out multiple times because we were talking so much trash. You know, and then when I had my boys, it was something, I'd even say, like, I lived in Berkeley for a year. My wife went to UC Berkeley, and I moved down, and we, you know, the hard thing was I had no friends because where I worked, I was a manager, and you can't really have a bunch of friends there.
Yeah.
My wife didn't have friends at UC Berkeley because Berkeley was so highly competitive that no one wants to be your friend. They just want to compete for what's happening at school. And so I had a Coca-Cola card. I would take a BART for $1.60 from
$1.60 for BART
from Berkeley.
Jeez.
To Oakland. I would sit in the stand sometimes by myself, sometimes with my wife, and like the A's were my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I got older, not only did I start bringing my boys when they were young to A's games, years ago I wrote a long form piece on losing your fandom, because as a beat writer of a team, you're not allowed to be a fan anymore. And as someone who grew up here in Sacramento, like there's a moment where you have to give up being a fan and like all of that goes away. But I didn't cover the A's, so I could still be a fan and I could still teach my son, especially my oldest, because my youngest has never been into sports, but my oldest, how to be a fan by taking him to games, taking him to playoff games. And then I have this random thing that I lost connection with a friend that was really close in like sixth, seventh, eighth grade. We were good friends in high school, but again, we had kind of lost our connection.
Yeah.
But he found me on Facebook years ago, and we reconnected by taking our sons to baseball games.
That's incredible.
And
it's so fun.
I would drive down, we'd get to his house, we'd get on a BART and take it into the stadium, and we'd sit there with our boys that were around the same age and kind of be part of what's happening. And I think it is about the memories. It's about being there for big moments, but also seeing some of the greatest things that you've ever seen. And it's about peeing in a trough and and having the outfield grass be perfect
every
single
time.
Every time. The infield, watching the guys go out and drag the field not only before the game and spray it down, but also, you know, what, in the sixth, seventh inning.
Mm.
Like, that's what it's about. It's about, like, having something that is right there, you know,
yeah.
and you know, so tangible. So I think it's a horrible day. I hate what's happening to the good people of Oakland. You've been to a lot more games because you're so much closer to the stadium than I am.
Yeah.
But when I went to games, they were really special, and I have great memories, and I'm going to be happy to see them in Sacramento as opposed to going straight to Las Vegas. And I hope that they get stuck in Sacramento, and I hope that they're here in Sacramento forever. But I also understand that there's a reality here of poor ownership and what that can mean and what it has meant and how they've stripped away people's ability to be fans. And I hate that, because being a fan of a team is, you know, going out there and taking your four-year-old to a game and buying him like a Kevin Martin jersey, and then having that, you find it in his drawer 10 years later.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. That's what being a fan is. And
yeah,
by them never allowing the last 25 years of fans to truly embrace players, embrace like the future, embrace anything mm-hmm. that was tangible, it's just really, really hard. And it's almost like they replaced all of what a normal team would feel for somebody with like books, you know, like Moneyball and these ideas about thinking of the game differently. But at the end of the day, like, I can love the A's because I grew up with Ricky Henderson and Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire and Carney Lansford and Tony Phillips and Dave Henderson. And, you know, I grew up watching like players that were like really, really tangible.
Yeah.
And now it's so gone, and I feel for everybody, especially who's losing their jobs there in Oakland. It's just absolutely horrible.
Yeah, man. Going with my folks tonight, and that's just kind of that was kind of the cool thing, is like you can kind of trace through life, at least for me, and I think this goes for a lot of people. Grew up going to games with my parents, right? Was there for Game 3 of the 06 ALDS when the A's finally broke through and they won a division series. They sweep the Twins. Just bananas atmosphere. Just so much, so much fun. And then, you know, start going to games as I get later into high school and you know, my friends and I can start driving and we'd go to games during the summer. And it didn't matter if the A's were good or bad or whatever. We were going to go out. We're going to sit in the bleachers and we're going to have a great time. We're going to tailgate beforehand. And it was going to be so much fun. My third year of college, really, really struggling personally, just kind of trying to figure out what I was doing. I think a lot of people do it at 19, 20 years old,
mm-hmm.
Just trying to figure it out. Scrounged together some pennies and got a 15-game season ticket package in the bleachers for like $200. And the people in the bleachers took me in as one of their own, right? And spent I went to 20 plus games that year. Driving in from Sacramento, doing that long drive up 80, but there's nowhere else I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Other than at the Coliseum with, you know, the homies. And then my wife and I, when we started dating, we'd go to some A's games. We got season tickets 1 year, went to 15 or 20 games, however many we went to that year. It's just kind of been in the whole, like the plan was, like, oh yeah, hey, it's someday I'll, you know, hopefully have a kid and we'll get to do this, whether it's at the Coliseum or a different stadium. And that's gone is tough. And that's kind of what I'm, that's kind of the part that I'm struggling with this, is I think I would feel this way even if they were tearing down the Coliseum and they were going to a new stadium in Oakland. Like, there would still be that like sadness of leaving a place, because is it objectively a dump? Like, yeah, no, like, no doubt. I've been to not a ton of stadiums, but I've been to several other stadiums, and it's like, oh, this is what a modern baseball stadium is supposed to look like. But at the same time, like, if you grew up an A's fan, or you grew up going, not even an A's fan, I have so many friends who are not A's fans who just love going to A's games, and it's like, yeah, it's a dump, but it's like ours.
Yeah, yeah.
And
same with Arco.
Yeah, right. It's like, you can trash Arco all you want, but like, get in there with you know, 18,000 Kings fans or whatever, and you'll realize how special the place is. Like you said, it's the trough, it's, you know, the bleachers, it's the high sky for a 12:37 first pitch. It's that walk across the BART ramp.
It's tough, man. It's tough. Yeah. I get it.
Gonna miss it, dog.
Yeah.
Alas, we persist.
We persist. No, I honestly, like, the emotion of it for you is, I totally get it. And I'm like super emotional about it too, but the fact is, like, I did go through two full-blown relocation attempts, and you get so jaded by the infighting and the mm-hmm. just the chaos and the lies and everything that happens.
Yeah.
In when teams decide to do things like this, and mm-hmm. owners decide to do things like this.
Yep.
And it makes it so hard, because you do, you know, again, like, how many city council meetings and how many times you're, like, we, yep. I mean, I did an entire documentary on an almost relocation, and it's just really, really difficult to get it. I just feel like, you know.
I'll tell you what, man. Mitch Spence pitching for the A's tonight has a chance to be an all-time legend for me.
There you go.
Get an electric outing from Mitch Spence, and your boy's going to be psyched. Anyway, 6:40 first pitch, A's Rangers.
That's right.
Speaking of first pitches, 4:20 first pitch, 4 o'clock coverage begins, Mets at Braves. That's a huge battle for a wild card spot. The Braves are two back of the Mets entering this three-game series. They're a game and a half back. Excuse me. They're a game and a half back of the Diamondbacks for the final wild card spot. So, tons to get into with Mets and Braves. Again, we're covering that for you right here on ESPN 1320. 4 o'clock, coverage begins.
You just walked into a very emotional
Mets
Kyle.
And Braves breakdown?
No.
I'm doing a promotion to try and get out of the topic that was making me cry on the radio.
Oh, that was good. What? Thanks. What was that?
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
James?
I'm going to my last A's game tonight.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyways,
did we talk about this? Weren't you? Okay, maybe not. Maybe you weren't going to go, James.
I said I was not going to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
did the game last year. The reverse boycott game.
Yes. I recall.
Good last game to go to.
Yeah.
Where are you from again?
I'm from the East Bay.
You're from, okay.
It's a town called Brentwood. About 45 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I got you. This is an acceptable response. Like, I'm fine with that. Okay. I'm a little confused by people like who just like the A's, who are really angry or heartbroken over this. Like, oh, I'm an A's fan. I live in Sacramento. I'm really upset about them leaving Oakland. Well, they're coming to Sacramento.
Yeah.
No, I'm upset. Okay, that's fine. I hate what has happened to the city of Oakland. Like, that's mm-hmm. where my anger comes from, and frustrations and hurt feelings come from.
Yeah.
Is I hate, one, what the city is going through, period. But, like, the Warriors are gone. You can frame it however you want to. The mm-hmm. Warriors are gone. The
Raiders are gone.
the Raiders are gone. The A's are gone. All of their sports teams are gone. You still have a venue that gets booked. I mean, Usher is in Oakland this weekend. Like, mm-hmm. that's pretty major. Like, Sacramento mm-hmm. didn't get that. San Francisco didn't get that. But that's two nights. That's Saturday mm-hmm. and Sunday. And then that's it. You can book concerts there at the arena. But what are you going to do with that stadium? And I just feel...
playing soccer there, I know.
Yeah, I just feel bad that it's not... That city, in a multitude of different ways, isn't in a better spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like whatever's happened to Oakland, like but it's been since A's moved there. Like every time that you have something positive that could be like catapulting the city forward, it just gets lost.
Yeah.
You know, like you just went through one of the greatest runs in NBA, modern NBA history with the team.
Yeah.
And it didn't impact that city.
You lost them, yeah.
You still lost the team.
Yeah.
Yep. So, anyways, that's what was going on. And so I was trying to get the Mets Braves 4 o'clock coverage begins on ESPN 1320 plug in.
Because when you walk in, sports radio station.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good promo. It's a good job.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's talk about something happy then. What do you want to talk about?
I said the Niners season's over.
Wow. Wow. Now.
There were no tears shared for that.
For those who have not picked up on this on my dear friend Kyle, this is the type of fan that he is.
Yes.
Like, it's...
the eternal pessimist, baby.
Yes. Like, quick. Like, we've texted during Warrior games where it's like 4-2. Oh, it's over. This whole series is over. These guys stink. Do you see the way that just happened? This team stinks. What a run we had, though.
At least I'm consistent.
I think they've won two titles since Kyle sent me that text.
That's fine.
Hey, man, I'm trying to coach a fantasy football team with him. And I'm like, bro, you gave up on Brock Purdy in week one, after week one.
It was week two.
Right?
And to be fair, the Eagles' defense hasn't been playing great. Derek Carr and the Saints have been lighting it up. Brock Purdy didn't have any weapons. I didn't think it was a crazy take.
I know.
I didn't think it was that insane. Turned out to be a bad call, but whatever.
Brock Purdy has the second most yards in the NFL and the 12 most attempts.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's an I don't even know what stat means. Like, he's efficient.
Yeah. That's like having the most three-pointers in the NBA on the 12th most attempts.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
No, everything he's doing is pretty spectacular.
I think it is.
Here's what
Wait a second. You don't think the season's over.
I was being dramatic for the radio, but this has such 2020 vibes to me. This has such a kind of a weird start to the year.
I blocked out a lot of that year. Can you remind me what that was like?
D Ford.
Okay, yeah.
Banged up right away. Richard Sherman had the Achilles thing, oddly enough. Nick Bosa gets hurt in week two. Solomon Thomas hurt in week two. Jimmy Garoppolo hurt in week two. Oh. I think somebody got hurt in week three, too. It was the turf.
That was the turf year, right?
Yeah, yeah, they played back-to-back games at MetLife Stadium.
That's right.
It's just like, and that's how with Javon Hargrave's injury... and it just this is how it's starting to feel to me.
The Hargrave injury is tough. The thing with the injuries this time versus in 2020, it feels like it's a slow death.
Yes. Yes.
Rather than an execution. Yeah. 2020 felt like an execution, you know, pardon
week two,
the term.
It was just like,
well, that might have done it.
Yeah.
And this one is just like, okay. I mean, Kittle's back at practice, mm-hmm. Charvarius Ward, like those guys are practicing, mm-hmm. and it's like, all right. But we're watching now, right? We're monitoring this moving mm-hmm. forward. It's week three,
mm-hmm.
and we're monitoring this moving forward. Like, all right, got it. Like, that's part of the deal. To me, my feelings, though, are the same. I hate that Debo's out, Christian McCaffrey, all of that stuff. You give me Trent, you give me Brock. You give me Warner, you give me Bosa. I think you still have a really good chance to compete. It's different when you start talking Super Bowl, though. It's mm-hmm. different when you start exactly. talking about beating the Chiefs. I don't know that it's different coming out of the NFC because I can't pinpoint an NFC team yet.
We can't decide. I think Minnesota's good. Other than that, everybody's the same.
They are. Minnesota's good, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they're not. But I don't think Minnesota's like the elite of the – I'm not willing to like say they're the elite of the conference yet.
Not yet.
They're good. Mm-hmm. And can they be around? Will they be around at the end of the season, at the end of the regular season, in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But – there's no one where I'm like, you know, when I look at Arizona, when I look at Detroit, there's no one where I'm like, or even New Orleans or Minnesota or mm-hmm. Tampa Bay or Atlanta. I'm like, oh, they're a lot better than the 49ers.
Yeah.
Even with the 49ers banged up.
We'll see. I'm worried about their passing.
Don't lose Trent, don't lose Fred, and don't lose your quarterback. And I think they'll continue to compete.
All right.
Let's see. What do you guys
The got? Christian McCaffrey news was concerning.
That's wild.
Just going to take a trip over to Germany and see what's going on here, spin the blood a little bit, and
yeah.
come on back to the Bay Area.
See how it goes.
That's tough.
All right, man.
Kenny
back today?
Yeah, Kenny's here. TK's here. Jason Jones.
Crick, not Tim Kawakami.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, just making sure.
Trista Crick. One of those people will appear on our show all the time. The other one will never, ever, ever appear. And I was offended on my walk this morning. Just walking Sprout, minding our business through the mean streets of Rockland, and these two ladies offended me. Now I'm going to tell everybody why. Couldn't believe it. Happened twice. Had never happened. Ever. Happened twice on the same walk. Couldn't believe it.
Oh.
Couldn't believe it.
D-Lon KC coming up next. That's James. I'm Kyle. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube. The Insider's back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Until then, drink water. Be nice to people. Boop.